You're listening to the Limbic Light Podcast, a podcast dedicated to spreading information all about light, energy, and other natural therapies to enhance your health, particularly your brain, mind, and mood health. So today we're really fortunate to have Anadi Martel back with us for part two of our interview with him. And for those of you who haven't heard the first part, I really urge you to have a listen to that. It's a wonderful episode where Anadi talks about the sensora system, about consciousness, how light can affect our brain, our mood, our mind. So in any case, for those of you who aren't already familiar with Anadi, I'm going to introduce you to him once again. Being a physicist and expert in electronics, Anadi Martel designs instruments for use in the exploration of sound and light. He also acts as a consultant in special projects for diverse organizations such as IMAX, Cirque du Soleil, and the Metropolitan Opera of New York. His sound spatialization devices have been used all around the world, including by NASA. Anadi's focus is the interaction between technology and consciousness. He has researched the therapeutic properties of light, and through his 30-plus years of research, he's designed and created the multi-sensorial system called the Sensora. The Sensora combines audio, visual, and kinesthetic, that's sensation or vibrational touch, all of these stimulations together to produce a profound experience, which has been used as a therapeutic support and tool in numerous clinical applications. So Anadi has served as the president of the International Light Association for 7 years, and he is highly regarded as probably one of the top experts in his field of light therapeutics around the world. He recently published a book titled Light Therapies, A Complete Guide to the Healing Power of Light, available both in French and English. I consider this book to be one of the probably most thorough, up-to-date guides on light therapies that's available at the moment. It's an easy read for both expert and lay people, and it's a true masterpiece. So with that, it's my real pleasure to once again introduce you all to Anadi Martel. Hello, Anadi.
Hello, Manisha. Good to be with you again.
Wonderful to have you once again. We're talking about something really fascinating that I have a great interest in, and of course you do too. It's a step on from consciousness. We're going to be talking about brain waves and the use of specifically gamma frequency waves to affect the brain today. So Anadi, just for the benefit of our listeners, could you maybe just go through, briefly explain the different frequencies of the brain, from delta, theta, alpha, beta, and gamma, just so they have a bit of a background.
Mm-hmm. So our brains emit tiny electromagnetic fields. They're very small, a few microvolts only around the cranium. So you need very sensitive instruments to detect them. They've been studied since the 1930s, actually, when the first EEG detectors came around. And very early on, it was found that there's a link between the main frequencies of these signals and our state of mind. So it's now pretty well established that there's a certain number of bands, frequency bands, that correspond to broad functions. Everybody by now has heard of those bands. So everybody knows about alpha brainwaves, which are linked to a relaxation. And the alpha waves are actually just the default setting of the brain, like a car engine running in neutral. That'll be the alpha waves for our brain. And this is between 8 and 12 pulsations per second or hertz. Then when you start to think, to activate your mind and analyze things and so on, the speed of the brain waves increase. You go in what's called the beta range, which is roughly 12 to 25, 30 hertz. That's where we spend actually most of our waking days when we're actively engaged in mind activities. And then below the alpha range, when you go to sleep at night, your brain waves slow down. In deep sleep, they slow down to nearly just one cycle per second, 1 hertz. And that's the delta range between 1 and 4 hertz, roughly. So that's deep sleep. And in between this and alpha, there's a very interesting range that's called the theta range, which corresponds to kind of a semi-wakeful state. It's when you fall asleep, you go through this theta range. It's interesting because it's kind of in between state. So it corresponds to an opening also. You're more open, the conscious and unconscious are closer together. So it's sometimes linked intuition or creativity and so on, the theta range. So for a very long time, these four bands, they span altogether from 1 hertz to about 30 hertz, were considered to be the range of function of our brain. This, of course, has led to all kinds of medical applications, both in monitoring brainwaves and also in influencing brainwaves through a phenomenon called brainwave entrainment. When you're exposed to sensorial input that is pulsing at a frequency within the range of our brainwaves, there's a natural phenomenon where our brain has a tendency to fall in sync with that stimulus. It's a direct result of a resonance effect. And resonance, of course, is a universal phenomenon, a key phenomenon at all levels of reality, from the most microscopic, the quantum world, to the most microscopic galaxies and so on. These resonances are happening at all levels of our reality. It's whenever two phenomena that are pulsating and vibrating are in a similar range, they will connect together. They will tend to entrain each other.
That's such an interesting phenomena, isn't it? When you think about it, that we're so highly influential that we can be influenced by external inputs. So that's brain entrainment that you're talking about.
Right. Basically, everything in the universe is vibrating at certain level. Nearly all phenomena are driven by oscillations and pulsations and vibrations. So, and our brain is a beautiful example of that, because it is really the result, the fact that you can perceive this macroscopic electromagnetic field around the cranium is in itself quite extraordinary, because it's generated by the few billions of neurons that we have in our brain. And each neuron by itself generates extremely tiny fields. Whenever there's a spike of electricity through a neuron, there's a tiny little field being created. And you would expect that these billions of neurons would fire pretty much randomly inside your brain, and you would add up with the kind of averaged field that would come to nothing. But in fact, because of this, the magic of resonance, something completely different happens. These billions of neurons tend to fall in sync. They will start to fire in sync with each other. Again, it's just because the fields propagate from neuron to neuron, and they tend to start to work together in a very spontaneous way, a natural way. And when these billions of tiny signals add together, then they generate this field that we can detect and measure at the scale of the whole brain. So the very fact that we have these brain waves is because already in the brain there's a tremendous resonance and synchronicity happening. Then it's very simple to understand how, if you have sensorial input, whether it's from vision or from sound, that keeps on adding a little signal at a certain frequency that's within brainwaves, it will merge with all these electrical signals within neurons, and it will again create a new resonance that will be entrained by the sensorial input. So it's not surprising that this phenomenon happens. And it's quite powerful. You can do it with all senses, whether it's light, sound, or touch, and so on. Although from experience, it appears that through vision is the most powerful way to achieve this, simply because vision is our main sense. It's said that up to 80% of our sensorial input comes from vision. So that means that light is a beautiful tool to entrain brainwaves.
That's fantastic.
It's been used for quite a while, since the 70s. People have been experimenting with pulsing lights, stroboscopes, and so on to interact with our brainwaves.
I wanted to ask you, as you were speaking, I was getting a vision of the ocean waters. I think about the brain and I wonder, you know, do we only have just one frequency going at one time, or it's more likely that we've got several different frequencies going together? And I imagine a chaotic brain would have lots of little waves and big waves simultaneously, and they're chaotic and choppy. But I also imagine that if you put on something like the Sensora, which would start to resonate the waves in your brain or the waters of the ocean into a nice smooth waveforms, I imagine then you'd probably have a predominance of one major brain wave. Or would you still maybe have a little one? For example, could you have alpha and delta at the same time? Or how does that work?
Oh, it's always a mix. You always have many frequencies running in different parts of the brain at any given moment. But often there's like a major frequency that occupies a significant part of the cortex. And so you will always have a mix, but you can have one or two main components that will dominate.
Okay.
And that can be used for therapy because it provides a way to influence the brain, to gently push it towards a state that corresponds to the frequency that you are stimulating. So, for example, people who are stressed, who cannot relax, if you stimulate them with alpha waves, after a few minutes, they will find it much easier suddenly to start to relax and cool down and slow down.
Isn't that incredible to think that we can actually put electrical signals into our brain and it will influence our state of mind? I mean, isn't that incredible, really, when you think about it? I think it's amazing. Anyway, you didn't touch on gamma, and then I was going to mention two other frequencies that have been recently discovered, but maybe just touch briefly on gamma before we dive deeply into it. So where is gamma along the range?
Right, I didn't include it because until fairly recently, these four main brainwave bands were really the main focus of research. And the researchers were not really aware that there were actually other frequencies happening beyond this main range, because the signals are lower, more difficult to detect. They are more transient. So gamma waves is the frequency range above beta. So it starts at around 30 hertz or 35, depending on researchers. It's not clearly delineated. And it goes up to roughly 100 hertz is considered to be the range. So it's a whole new band of much faster brain waves. It's been researched only since really the 90s and 2000s. So it's a fairly new addition. Actually, we don't know as much about these gamma waves as we do about other bands still today. But the research is gradually showing some main properties of the gamma bands. It appears that it's in many ways linked to consciousness. And like beta is linked to mind activity, thinking. But gamma would be more linked to the higher cognitive functions, like intuition or understanding, or when you have a flash and you suddenly everything becomes clear, then you have a burst of gamma waves happening at the same time. So gamma is really linked to this higher cognitive aspect of awareness and consciousness. And because of that, for example, there are many studies which have linked it to meditation. Long-term meditators have more gamma brainwaves, higher levels than the average person. Even when they're not meditating, it kind of stabilizes in their brain. It's because of that, it's like people are starting to be interested in this band. Just when they're talking about overall health, or mental health, because they seem to bring a higher harmonizing effect.
That's so interesting.
So that was the situation, I would say, until 3-4 years back. People were mildly interested in gamma brainwaves and were experimenting with it on a small scale. And something happened a few years back in 2016 that pretty changed the picture quite drastically. It's actually a very interesting event for us working with energy medicine. And this is because a researcher from mainstream medicines, a researcher from related to the MIT and Harvard School of Medicine, so really top research labs, started to get interested in gamma brainwaves. It's Dr. Tsai, she's become somewhat famous since then.
What was her name? Can you repeat that again?
Yes, Dr. Tsai, Dr. Li Hui Tsai.
Maybe we can put a link in the show notes to some of her work. That would be good.
You Google her, you'll find tons of links. She's, as I said, quite famous by now.
Mm.
And she was working with brain degeneration and Alzheimer's disease. She noticed, she had seen already that in animals or humans who have developed Alzheimer's, one of the first bands of brainwaves that starts to disappear as the brain degrades is the gamma brainwave. That's really the first to go, and it's really the first sign that something is very wrong with the brain because of Alzheimer's. So she figured, since the gammas are so important to the origin or the beginning of the trouble, perhaps if we use stimulation in that range, it could have a beneficial effect. So she worked on mice and rats, of course, because you can't do that kind of experimentation on humans in the medical setting directly. And she used the mice who were genetically engineered to develop Alzheimer's. And she installed flashing lights, pulsing. She pulsed at many different frequencies, tried to see if any were having effect. And she found that when you pulse lights at 40 hertz, which is right in the gamma brainwave range, you get a very strong effect. She herself couldn't believe it in the beginning. She found that within an hour of pulsing lights, the brain of these diseased mice actually started to physically change. What's called the microglia, these cells that are in the brain clean up our cells, start to decrease in quantity as Alzheimer's develop. And because of that, you have protein buildup, the plaque buildup in the brain that's associated with Alzheimer's starts to increase because the microglia stop doing their job. They stop cleaning up this plaque. And so she found that after just an hour of this light, microglia in those brain mice were increasing tremendously, like by 40, 50%.
Goodness.
And so very striking effect. And she could see that cognitive improvements as well. The mice were performing better and so on.
You were saying that she was looking at other frequencies as well, but it was really just at that 40 hertz that she started seeing those really remarkable effects. Did she
Correct.
Experiment further into the gamma, the higher gamma or high beta? The reason being is I've spoken to someone else in Canada who uses brain entrainment, and he's doing a clinical study also into Alzheimer's for different brain frequencies. He found that the high beta range was also having positive effects, but I just wondered if she or you know about other frequencies other than purely the 40 hertz were having effect.
Well, many frequencies will have effects at many different levels. What is striking about this 40 hertz is that it's a very physical effect. It directly transforms the biochemistry of the brain. It's not just a cognitive effect, an emotional effect or a sensation. It's really a physical, biochemical transformation within the brain. So yes, for sure, you can have other frequencies that can have very beneficial or interesting effects. But there seems to be something specific about that 40 hertz. And I've seen studies where they did very fine differences, like just 1 or 2 hertz below or above, and the effects seemed to decrease quite substantially. So there seems to be a sweet spot there around 40 hertz.
So incredible. And do you know more about the study as far as how she was pulsing the lights? Were they just LED red lights, or what format was she using?
I believe it's white LED, white LEDs.
Mm.
In the cage of the animals.
Mm. I imagine that at 40 hertz, you could almost not see the flickering. It's quite a fast rate, isn't it? 40 little pulses
Indeed,
per second.
Yes. Yeah, there's a limit that's called the flicker fusion frequency, beyond which our visual system stops perceiving pulsations. You just see an average level. You don't see any more pulsation.
What is that level?
It's roughly 50 to 60 hertz for most people. So when you're at 40 hertz, you're very close to that limit. So it decreases gradually. And at 40 hertz, you barely see it. It's really just, you have to look carefully to see the quick, rapid fluctuation.
That's so interesting. I also wanted to mention that I've been reading a book by Dawson Church called Mind Matters, wonderful book. And he's also very interested in brain frequencies. And one of the things that he spoke about was that people who are able to maintain a level of alpha waves for a significant period of time, for example, if they're in a deeply relaxed or good meditation state, they spontaneously start to generate the gamma waves. And so that the gamma waves are almost like a side effect or an offshoot from being able to spend that extra time in alpha. That was one of his comments. And do you know anything about that?
Sure, it makes sense. I mean, just plain alpha on its own isn't much of a, it's a rather boring state, actually. It's not nothing very special about it. And I mean, early researchers were aware of that, like Maxwell Cade, who was one of the pioneers in the 70s, who developed the mind mirror, one of the first instruments that lets you see curves of the different frequencies happening together. He found that really the interesting meditative state, higher awareness, were a combination. You had this peak in alpha, which deeply relaxed it, but you also had bumps in theta and also in beta. So the three together, with alpha being the main component, then it means you are deeply relaxed, but also you're still aware, you're still very much awake. And of course, meditation is always this combination of being relaxed, but also being present, being awake. That's the interesting state. It's when you have both of these together.
So maybe the gamma is the heightened awareness of being this intuitive heightened awareness, but having still the very deeply relaxed state. So it's like a tandem duo effect of the two together.
Right. And that we've been seeing in studies on the sensora is that using light as a way to entrain the brain in this way, both through pulsations and also just purely through colors, pure colors, tends to spontaneously create that combination, that special combination that really corresponds to peak performance, which is deep relaxation and at the same time very much awake and present. And that's the beauty of these techniques, that they generate the state in a very simple and natural way without much effort from the person. Just being immersed in that harmonious sensorial stimulation brings you there on its own.
So with your sensora system, you're not just pulsing one frequency as in the experiment with the mice, but you're actually very beautifully, gently pulsing several different frequencies almost simultaneously or going from one to the other. Is that right? Is that a good way of describing it?
Yes, indeed. It's not only the pulsing aspect of it, which is one key aspect, but it's also the fact that you use the power of colors, chromotherapy. Chromotherapy on its own is a very powerful modality. I mean, there's many, many techniques working purely with pure colors without the pulsation aspect. So when you combine both together, it becomes really interesting because you can have the best of both these dimensions working together.
That's fantastic. And just coming back to the gamma frequencies, so there's been research into using these frequencies for Alzheimer's, but are you aware of other brain conditions that they're thinking that the gamma frequencies might be helpful for?
Oh yeah, it's being looked at now for different types of dementia and different types of brain degeneration and so on. Since that early article, that 2016 article by Dr. Tsai, there's been a lot happening. Her team has kept on researching, and other teams have also looked into it. So regularly now we have new articles coming out on developments in the field. So it's quite dynamic and quite fascinating. Of course, we're all waiting for studies on humans. The researchers are very careful to say that it seems to work on mice, but we cannot automatically say that it'll work on humans. And so there are studies ongoing on humans now, but it's still too early to, nobody's saying anything. It'll take a few years. So, but there is great hope that this could be a wonderful non-invasive way to help Alzheimer's. It's certainly, it's clear that it doesn't cure or it's not a magical cure, because you need the stimulation quite constantly. And if you do these sessions, for example, and the human studies they do, I think they do it like twice a week for an hour, something like that, or even every 2 days, it depends on the studies. And if you stop doing it, just within a week or two, the microglia start again to decrease. So it's a very quite temporary effect. So it's not a magical cure. But still, whatever helps in that field is of tremendous importance, because there is no really, there's no drug, no cure at all is helping for Alzheimer up to now.
Yeah, that's interesting. I am aware of transcranial light therapy, where they're using near-infrared to penetrate through the skull to affect the brain tissue, also for Alzheimer's. I'm not sure if they're actually using that at the gamma frequency as well, but I know that they are as well.
Sure. For example, the Vi-Light.
Yes.
It's a Canadian company, has a unit which is specifically attuned to gamma. So the whole point is to bring the stimulus to the cortex. So whether it is through the natural gateways of senses, through the optic nerve and so on, or whether it's directly through the cranium, because near infrared light will go through the cranium, you will get similar results in both cases.
So that was actually going to be one of my questions. Do you think that you get a stronger effect having the light irradiating through the eyes to affect the brain, because the eyes are more or less a part of the brain tissue, or going through the cranium? What's your sense? I know that there's probably no studies validating that, but what's your sense?
Well, both have their interests. They touch different parts of the brain, probably. Transcranial light is a purely biochemical effect. It's directly affecting the neurons and neuron metabolism, stimulating and so on. Whereas when you use vision, you have a doorway to a much wider ranges of influence. You can work directly with our subjective perception, our awareness, our consciousness. When you work with colors, you touch these levels. So especially for psychotherapy and so on, you can have a much more deep impact through the visual system, because it's more multidimensional, I would say. But for very basic brain biochemical imbalances, whether it is perhaps in forms of depression or degenerations or strokes and so on, it certainly has its place.
Biological, so the transcranial might be more pertinent to biological changes, whereas the other has additional psychological effects as well through the eyes.
And this is where that I was saying that this study by Dr. Tsai was a boon for us working with energy medicine, because it's one of the first times where a medical researcher suddenly finds an interest in using a vibrational stimulus. This is quite new in medicine. There's not much of that happening yet. It's starting to happen with some people are using frequencies in nerves and so on to try to influence different parts of the nervous system. So it's the very beginning of that whole vibrational field in mainstream medicine. But this particular gamma waves question is suddenly making the whole idea of vibrational stimulus respectable for mainstream science and a valid subject of research, which it was hardly the case before. Brainwave entrainment, biofeedback, and so on has been pretty much on the sidelines, more in alternative medicine and so on. It hasn't been used or accepted or heavily researched by mainstream medicine. So it's really this gamma brainwave research is kind of opening doors towards a new understanding through vibrational medicine. So to me, it's a very positive development.
It is, isn't it? Exciting. And yes. Anadi, I wanted to ask you, I was going to touch on it before, but now's probably a good time, just to ask you about these two other brain waves. I imagine there's so much about the brain that we don't know about, but more recently there's been two other ranges of frequencies that have been discovered that come from the brain, and they are a very, very low frequency. I think sub-delta, they call it epsilon, and then another very high one even beyond the gamma. Quite sure you told me the name of that. That was lambda. What do you know about both of those frequencies? They're quite curious to me. Maybe our listeners might like to know a little bit about that too.
The lambda, as far as I know, is next to nothing is known. It's even more transient and ephemeral than the gamma. It's defined roughly as between 100 to 200 hertz. So really, there's not much I could tell about the lambda range. It's been given a name, but there's next to no information on it.
Do they know where or when it gets released in humans, at particular times of the day or certain types of people or anything like that?
I really couldn't say. I didn't look deeply into it.
Sure. It's so new. Well, we look forward to hopefully those brain researchers will be able to give us more information on that. What about the lower one?
The other end, the so-called epsilon range below 1 hertz, that's a whole other area that's very interesting. And there are more research in that range. And it's also called sub-delta because it is below the delta range, which ends at 1 hertz. So this is very slow oscillation that can take many seconds to unfold. And there's actually split in two range, the slow waves, which is from about 1 to 1/10 of a hertz, or 1 to 10 second cycles. And there's below that the so-called infra-slow range, which is 10 to 100 seconds frequency. Mm,
that's slow.
It's very slow. Like it can take a whole minute to unfold. It's very slow rhythm.
And that's coming from the brain.
It's coming from the brain indeed. But of course, it's an interaction and feedback loops with our whole body. Mm. There's research linking these slow waves to different things. For example, they seem to be deregulated in kids with ADHD. And there's been studies where they try to do entrainment with those slow waves to help them. It's also clearly linked to chronic pain, fibromyalgia, and so on. There's been some studies where it's been shown that these slow rhythms, like 2 to 4 seconds waves, very helpful. It's quite easy to understand even intuitively. If you have this slow cycle, you just imagine it kind of cools you down. It brings you below it really deeply relaxes when you have this slow wave, like the ocean wave or so on. Or the breath. It's also the breath is at a sub-delta frequency. So it's very natural that these very slow frequencies would have a powerfully relaxing effect and a harmonizing effect to really bring everything back in sync. The question is, how do you apply them? How do you generate signals to work with these very slow frequencies? You can't use sound, for example, because it's much too slow for a sound wave. But for light, it's perfect because you can have a light that's dimming and coming up at those slow rhythms. So it's very easy to modulate light at those slow rhythms.
So have you included that in your system already, some of those very, very slow?
Oh, yes. It's a key aspect of the sensora and the sensosphere are these very slow rhythms. And you perceive them as just waves across the screen. They're just slow movements, fade in, fade out, that come and go. They can be either through intensity or color changes and so on. In the array of oscillators within sensora or sensosphere, some oscillators are dedicated to the brainwave range and some are dedicated to the slow sub-delta range, and both run together. So you can have these waves, these slow waves superimposed over alpha waves, for example. And it's when you combine both that you get... the most potent effect
That's great. I imagine that that's probably simulating the more natural way the actual body rhythms actually operate, because if we have just a pure pulsing at one frequency continuously, it's almost a little bit jarring and a bit unnatural. But if with the way that you're doing it, you're having several different gentle modulations, frequencies merging with each other, I think it's a much more natural, a more assimilable way to take in the frequencies. Oh,
yes. That's actually what many researchers are coming to now, that it's much more interesting and biocompatible to sweep frequencies, not stay stuck at one obsessive frequency, but have ranges, gently moving ranges and that's why in the latest generations of my instruments, I have oscillators that are dedicated to doing frequency modulation of the main oscillators, so that you have these variations through a range of frequencies constantly happening. So yes, indeed, it is much more natural. And another aspect is often this type of brainwave entrainment, photic brainwave entrainment through light, is done with stroboscopes. For example, Dr. Tsai has been, this study that they're doing now with humans is with goggles with pulsing lights, pulsing like stroboscopes. That's something that very early on we decided to move away from, because it's again this idea that you are producing such a strong, overwhelming signal with a stroboscope that you're kind of flooding the brain. And it's nearly in a way a rape of your brain function through this very strong overriding signal. So indeed, the brain will entrain, you will force it to get in sync with that stimulus. But when you're trying to achieve healing and when you're working with people who are very sensitive or troubled, you don't want that kind of strong, overpowering influence. You want something soft. And that's why the way I use pulsing in the sensorial sensosphere is not at all through a stroboscopic process, but through a very gentle modulation of a small portion of the intensity. In a stroboscope, you'll be pulsing between 0% and 100%. It can be a square wave, so on, off, on, off. With light modulation I use, we'll be pulsing only maybe 2 or 3 or 5% of the intensity. When you do that, it's a very different phenomenon. It's not at all overwhelming like a stroboscope. We all know that stroboscopes can be quite violent, and a discotheque, for example, can be disturbing, can even be dangerous. It can trigger epilepsy. So, but when you work with these very low levels of modulation, first of all, you remove all this risk factor, because it's not strong enough to cause any adverse effect. And you enter in a different field, because now the light, it's calibrated to be on the verge of your perception. So it's just at the point where you start to see this very gentle fluctuation of the light. And then it's a bit like looking at fire, gently sparking fire.
Gentle movements. I have to attest for that, Anadi. Your system is just such a joy and a pleasure. It's like being in an ocean of moving colors and waves, gently caressed. I'm probably not using the correct terms, but it really is a delight. It's easy. Yes. It's a gentle, easy system, which has the powerful effects. So you've done really, really well to design that.
Well, that's really how we're working hypothesis, is that using these lower levels of light modulation might actually lead to deeper effects in the psyche. Because instead of protecting yourself from an overstrong signal like a stroboscope, where you really try to block it out, it's too much. There, on the contrary, because it's so subtle, you kind of are intrigued by it. You want to go deeper into it. So you're really open to it and you dive into it. Just like you, it's lovely when you look at a fire, you really gaze into it and let yourself go. So in a way, you can go much deeper in the unconscious, this gentle stimulus.
Talking about that, going much deeper, I was going to touch on it a little bit before that I had heard or read that the very low frequencies, the ones that you're using in the sensora, the subdelta, can sometimes be associated with out-of-body experiences or altered states of mind. I'm not sure how much delving in or investigation there's been into that area, but I have to say that using some of these light, your light system, I could imagine would be a perfect method for a spontaneous entrance into one of these altered states of consciousness. I don't know if it happens often with people who use your system, but have you ever heard of that with your system?
It could be, yes, for sure. It can happen with people who are very sensitive. But I would say for these kinds of altered states, probably it's more effective to use stroboscopes because then they really have a psychedelic effect. And for example, if you look at instruments like the Lucia number 3 made by Austrian researchers, they will generate kaleidoscopic patterns of light which are totally psychedelic, and it's quite easy from that to jump into altered states. So that would be a different doorway.
Okay.
But that is quite intense. It's not very controllable. It's really for people who are interesting who are adventurous in a way, wanted to. The sensora, we use a very different approach there. It's very soft and it's very risk-free, whereas when you use these psychedelic lights, there's always the epileptic factor risk. But with sensora, it happens at a softer, less drastic level. But I would say more reliable, more systematic, and ultimately we think deeper.
That's very interesting. Yes, I was actually just going to mention that I do use one of these systems that have a more forced pulsing effect, audio visual brain entrainment. I use it with acupuncture. I just wanted to mention that I saw someone yesterday and I did it in conjunction with acupuncture, some cranial points. And the person halfway through the session had a spontaneous vision of her deceased father from 30 years ago, and such a clear vision that it brought tears to her eyes and she was actually speaking to him out loud. I was quite surprised that it was actually capable of doing that. So that's interesting you say that particular more forceful, stronger strobostropic, I have problem saying that word, form of light therapy, it can bring on those really strong effects rather quickly. But I like your gentle approach. I think gentle is effective and safe. And
it does lead to altered and psychedelic experiences as well. Like we regularly we have people who have visions. People will see Egyptian hieroglyphs on the screen and will see pictures and characters and so on, whereas there is none of that. It's purely made by the mind. So it does happen as well, but it in this context it only happens when the person is totally ready for it, when the whole system is ready for these things to emerge. So it's never imposed from the outside. The sensora only creates a space, a harmonious space with a gentle stimulation. Wherever your own system is ready to go, it will naturally be brought there or facilitated to go in that direction. So that's one remarkable thing we see in this type of therapy, is that we never see adverse effects or bad trips or so on. It's always a very a comforting space that people, and even when traumas emerge, which we see happening in some forms of psychotherapy assisted with this type of light, it's always in a safe space where it's not disturbing. It's like it comes up and it's easy to absorb it and
digest and assimilate. Yes, that's great. I really love that. And Nadia, I just wanted, before we wrap up, I was going to ask you, are you planning any research using these gamma frequencies for the brain, or have you done something with the gamma that you're a new development or something of that sort? I'm keen to know.
Absolutely. All this research happening now with gamma brainwaves is very promising, but there's a big problem with it, is that they're using these stroboscopic lights and they need like sessions an hour long. So it's very hard to imagine, even if it works, to have people with dementia in retirement homes. You won't put them goggles that they keep on for an hour. It's like just not practically applicable. So how can you apply those gamma waves in a way that's more compatible with lifestyles of people? So that's why, in a setting like this in Sora, you can have these beautiful gamma pulsations on the whole screen. But even then, you won't necessarily have that available easily. So I applied it in the sensosphere, the light globe, where I created a new gamma program, which pulses quite strongly in gamma, more strongly than the other modes, because you perceive it so little, the gamma flickering, that it has to be quite intense to be visible. So what I want to explore is whether, instead of having this strong stroboscopic effect for a short time, like most researchers are doing, if you have a low-level stimulation in your environment that's constantly there, will it have an effect that is also significant? That's what I'm trying to find out. And with an instrument like the sensosphere, it's a beautiful object that you can have in your room, and that's you leave it on the whole day. And so it just creates beautiful colors. And at the same time, if it does provide this continuous gentle gamma stimulus, perhaps it will have some beneficial effect. So that's what we're trying to... we were hoping to start a study in retirement homes in France. It was supposed to start this March. And of course, you know what happened.
Of course.
It's been completely sidelined by the COVID emergency. So the study is postponed.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about that study. It was going to be in nursing homes or aged care facilities. Mm-hmm. They were going to install some of these. By the way, for the listeners who don't know about Anadi's sensor sphere, it's like a mini version of his very large, amazing Sensora, but it's very affordable, very portable. It's like a beautiful lamp. Probably you've got different sizes, Anadi. There's a larger size, maybe, was it 40 centimeter diameter? Would that be about right. The size? Mm-hmm. Yep. And absolutely beautiful. You wouldn't know that you're having therapy, but you certainly feel the effects by just having a light such as one of these lights in your room in the evening. So anyway, that's the light. That's a sensosphere for those of you who might be interested in having a look at Anadi's website and contemplating maybe purchasing one. They are awesome. And sorry, I'll come back to the track. But so your study, you're thinking of putting some of these lights into old age facilities, mm-hmm. so that people, maybe the staff, can monitor or do some sort of assessment on the patients to see how they're functioning, or what correct, how is it yes. going to look like?
Yeah, we were supposed to put I think 6 units in different centers, just try to evaluate whether the staff could see any improvement in the state or the mood of the people living there.
What a great way to do a study. It's so gentle and easy. I'd like to see that happening in Australia. If there's any listeners out there who actually work in an aged facility who would be interested in doing something like that, contact me, because between Anadi, myself, and whoever, I'm sure we could do a fantastic study here in Australia as well. That's very exciting.
That would be great.
All right. So, Anadi, any last thoughts or sharings that you'd like to divulge or share with our listeners, or tell us about anything else that you're doing?
Well, something that's keeping with this gamma brainwaves subject, some recent studies show that when you combine many senses, not just light, you amplify the effect greatly. So, for example, there's been studies where they combine light stimulus and sound stimulus at the gamma frequency, and they see that instead of merely acting on the visual cortex with light or with the auditory cortex with sound, as is the case with the separate stimulus, when you have both together, you see the whole brain lighting up. Many more regions are affected by this multisensorial stimulation. And in parallel with that, there's other people exploring kinesthetic stimulation, because 40 hertz is a perfect frequency to be felt as a vibration on the body. Very pleasant, low frequency. So there's people who have been applying it on reclining chairs, for example, vibrating it at 40 hertz. And they've also found very positive effects. So I really love this type of research, because it totally goes in the sense, the direction that we've always felt intuitively from the beginning, which is working from many senses simultaneously, the multisensorial approach. And of course, that's what we do with the sensora. We have the light, the sound, and the kinesthetic. So I've been creating gamma stimulation sessions, which have all three working together. I would suspect they'll be especially potent.
That's fantastic. And what would that actually look like? I think we spoke about it a little bit in the last episode when I interviewed you, some sort of mat or chair that a person sits in to receive the a vibration through their body physically, which I can just imagine would be just wonderful. And at the same time, headphones and a light in front of them, the globe or...
Well, yes, it could be the globe if it's with the sensosphere, or when the sensora, it's the large screen. And right, indeed, the three together is
the key.
Like I've just created a small version of this kinesthetic transduction device for the hands. There, I think I have some here.
You're such an amazing inventor, Anadi. I love how you're continuously improving, evolving your products.
So this is very new. It's a device that has a transducer, and it's made to, you put your palm on it, and so it vibrates your whole hand. So you can imagine just two of these with a small device like the sensosphere, and you have kind of a portable multisensorial stimulation.
So for those of you who can't actually see the screen, what it looks like, what Anadi just showed me, it's like maybe a half or a third of a ball, half a ball, mm-hmm. connected with a wire. There must be a transducer. The transducer is something that mm-hmm. vibrates to a certain frequency within the structure. So you put your hand over the half ball, or there's probably two half balls, one for each hand, and you receive the vibration through your hands. Is that correct? Is that what's happening? Right. What an awesome invention, Anadi. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah,
that's actually not yet released.
Yes. Keep me posted.
I'm fine-tuning it.
So I like that you're making things scalable, small and available, so that people in their own homes can start using these things. Anadi's also made a really small sensosphere ball light, which I can see him holding up in his hand. That fits in the size of your hand, in your palm. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that's probably, 15 centimeter diameter about?
No, it's 12.
12 centimeters, nice and small. So you've got mini versions of the huge, beautiful, big sensora coming into small versions that people can take into their homes, which is great.
Well, we're all getting there. And I have many colleagues working in the field. We all started with big installations in the 80s and 90s. And gradually, we are more and more concentrating in small portable devices that are more affordable, that can reach a larger number of people.
I think that's great, because with my work, I see people come in and I really know that for them to get their really good sustained results with therapy, they need to come usually twice a week, and sometimes it's just not possible or affordable for them. So if they can actually have a system of something like this in their own home where they're doing their own self-therapy,
right.
every day, every second day, that's where they're going to start getting really amazing results. So I'm really glad you're doing that.
Well, it's just a question of the technology. It's only in the past few years that we have miniaturized technology that allows this kind of devices. So it all goes together.
Fantastic. Well, with that, I think we'll wrap up the interview here. And Anadi, so just tell us the name of your website so that people can come and visit and have a really good look. And you've also got a series of some short videos, I think. Is that correct? Connected to your website? You've got some amazing information there. Anyway, tell us a little bit about what's there.
There's a few short introductory videos on light therapies in general and on the Sensora. The website is sensora.com, S-E-N-S-O-R-A. And there's also a website on my book, Light Therapies, which covers all these subjects. And that's just light-therapies.com.
And I have to encourage everyone once again with Anadi's book. A book like this is worth its weight in gold. Anadi's spent virtually his whole life researching these fields, and he's condensed it all into one book. And, well, maybe not all, that would be pretty hard, but a lot of his wisdom and knowledge. And so just by reading his book, you're basically going to get so much of his wisdom and experience and knowledge. So I highly recommend that book. Okay, so Anadi, thank you so, so much for coming on again. You've been very generous with your time.
And my pleasure.
And I really wish you well for all your new ventures. Please keep me informed. I'll plug your wonderful new inventions away to all my listeners as much as I can, because I think it's just a wonderful system that everyone would benefit from. So thank you so much.
Bye, Vanessa.
Bye. I'm Manisha Blunchley. You've been listening to Limbic Light Podcast. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing so that you can be informed whenever there's a new episode being released and what it is about. Thank you and stay well.